492, top line. Thank you. We're in the middle of learning about Shabbos, and the previous Psukim Hashem told Moshe that even though the building of the construction of the Mishkan is very important, yet...
Are you starting at Shani?
No, top line. Even though the construction of the Beis HaMikdash of the Mishkan is very important, yet you don't desecrate Shabbos. And we explain that Shabbos is all the things of Shabbos equal 7 that we discussed last week. Okay, then the Pasuk says that when it comes Shabbos, whoever does Malacha, Meisumas will die. And we discussed that there's 3 different types of death when it comes to Shabbos. If you did it intentionally and you were warned, you get stoned. If you did it intentionally and you weren't warned, so then you get kares. And if you did it accidentally, meaning you forgot it was Shabbos, so you maintain that this you're allowed to do on Shabbos, so then you have to bring a sin offering. So now the Pasuk says like this, V'shamer b'nei Yisrael says Shabbos. The Pasuk says the Jews shall observe Shabbos. Lasis as a Shabbos, to make the Shabbos, the Dereisem for all generations, Bris Elam, an everlasting covenant with Hashem. The Pasuk is saying 2 things. Number one, it says you have to be Shamru B'nai Yisrael Sa Shabbos, that they have to watch and observe the Shabbos. And plus, Lasis Sa Shabbos means they have to make the Shabbos. Meaning, according to many commentaries, what making the Shabbos means, you have to do those things before Shabbos that enables you to keep Shabbos properly. Like you need to make sure there's enough food and that nothing dangerous is in the, in a way of could hurt the Shabbos and so on. Another interpretation they bring down here from Rabbeinu Bachaya or Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachaya says, what does it mean, Lasis as a Shabbos? When a Jew keeps Shabbos down here, they make Shabbos in heaven. They make that Hashem.
Rabbi, what page are you on?
492. Top line. Okay, so it says the Eden of Hashem of Bnei Yisrael says Shabbos. They have to guard the Shabbos, and it says that if somebody keeps Shabbos properly, Hashem considers it as if they kept Shabbos Bris Elam from the beginning of creation. That's how great keeping Shabbos is. That L'Doreisam Bris Elam for your generation by keeping Shabbos, Hashem considers it as if you kept all the Shabbos from the beginning of creation. And the reason for that is because Shabbos is, again, the testimony that Hashem created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Another thing that the Pasuk is saying over here, that Lasis, V'shamrei Yisrael says Shabbos, and Lasis is a Shabbos, is that we learned, on Shabbos we get an extra neshama. We get an extra soul on Shabbos that leaves when Shabbos goes out, and that's why we actually smell the psalm, that we should feel good, and that the neshama which is leaving, the extra soul which leaves, should have a pleasant smell when it leaves, and so on and so forth. Now, it says it has to be Bris Elam. Now, what does this Bris Elam mean? That it has to be, in fact, some of us should learn, that teaches us that on Shabbos you're allowed to make a Bris, because Shabbos is called Bris Elam. So if Shabbos is a bris, so then you're allowed to obviously make a bris in Shabbos too. Okay, let's see the next pasuk. Beini uvein b'nei Yisrael, between me and the Jewish people, Eisi la'ilam, it's an everlasting sign. Ki sheishis yomim asa Hashem asa shemayim v'asa aretz. Simply it means that in 6 days, Hashem created heaven and earth. Uvayim ha'shvi, and on the seventh day, shavas v'yinofash. He rested, and he became, this simply means he became refreshed. The Mefarshim say, also Rabbeinu Bachaya says, that what does it mean? That's the point I mean. That what does it mean? Shavas vayinofash. Vayinofash means we get an extra nefesh. Vayinofash literally means, like it says in the English, you get refreshed. But it actually means, shavas vayinofash, that there's an extra nefesh that we get on Shabbos. Now, the Mefarshim asked this question, and in Chassidus, the question is asked a lot. Grammatically, this pasuk is incorrect. If you look at the end of the pasuk when it says "Kisheshes Yom Asar Hashem Asa Shemayim V'Asa Oretz," It should have said b'sheishes yamim, in 6 days. Okay? In 6 days, Hashem created heaven and earth. It doesn't say b'sheishes yamim. It says sheishes yamim. And the same expression, by the way, is in Aseret Dibros, in Parshas Yisrei, that we read a week and a half ago, that when it speaks about Shabbos, again it says the same thing. Ki sheishes yamim on page 410. It says, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, again it says the same thing, Kisheishis Yamim Asa Hashem, and 6 days God made, and it should have really said, Bisheishis Yamim, in 6 days. Same expression as here, it says, Kisheishis Yamim. So in Kabbalah and Chassidus it explains that Kisheishis Yamim Asa Hashem doesn't only mean in 6 days God created. It means the six Yamim, which I'll explain in a second, the six attributes of Hashem, the six midos of Hashem, also Hashem as Hashemayim v'arash, that's how Hashem made heaven and earth. Meaning like this, we have the 10 attributes of Hashem. There's 3 intellectual levels, Chochma, Bina, and Das, which is called the Seichel. And then you have the Shiva midos. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzachet, Yisayid, Malchus. These are the 7 attributes of Hashem. Now it says in Kabbalah that every day of the 6 days of creation, a different midah, a different attribute of Hashem created the world. On the first day, Hashem created with chesed, with kindness. Therefore, what was created on the first day, light, which symbolizes act of kindness, shining, revealing, giving. The second day, the attribute was gevurah. Gvura means strictness, separation. What did Hashem create on the second day? The heavens that split and separated the higher waters and the lower waters. The third day, Hashem created with the attribute of Teferes, and that's a Chay Yisayid. On Shabbos,
what is the third day?
Teferes. And the fourth day is Netzach. And the fifth day is Hod. 6 days is Yisod. And the seventh day, as we say, Shabbos Malchus, Yismachu b'malchuscha, Shomrei Shabbos. Shabbos is the level of Malchus.
The fourth and the fifth, what do they stand for?
Huh?
The fourth day and the fifth day, what do they stand for?
Netzach is power and victory, Nitzachim. And Hod is glory. And Yisayid is foundation. If you look at the beginning of creation, Hashem created vegetation. In fact, Hashem created 2 things on Shlishi. He finished the second day, and then he created vegetation, which is a sign of beauty, because all the different vegetations create a beautiful scenery. The fourth day Hashem made the heaven, the sun, and the moon. That's the level of Nitzach and power, might. Fifth day, Hashem created Yishu to Amayim, the bugs and the big fish. That's the level of Hod. Okay, and then you saw there was a creation of people and animals, and Shabbos is the level of Malchus. We learned
moon, you say it's power.
Netzach, well, Shnei Gdelim. First there were the big 2 lights, and then the moon complains, Hashem shrunk him. But the Ramban, we mentioned this Ramban, it's a very famous Ramban. The Ramban, by Sheni in Bereishis, discusses that we know ki elef shonim be'inecha k'yoyim esmel, that by Hashem a day is 1,000 years, the 6,000 years or 7 days of creation correspond with the 7,000 years that the world will exist. So the Ramban extrapolates it and shows the way each, not only each day, like the first day was chesed, the first 1,000 years was chesed. The second 1,000 years is gevura, like the second day was gevura. And the Ramban, just to give a few of the examples, the Ramban explained that the first day was chesed, light, therefore people lived very long. The first 1,000 years of creation, of 950, 970, whatever it was, he lived a very, very long period of time, because then was Hashem's chesed, and chesed meant kindness, so they lived a very long time. The second 1,000th year is gevura, Hashem brought the mabul, the flood that destroyed the world. The third 1,000th year era, like we know, Matan Torah was in the year 2448, the whole concept of Matan Torah is Bachedish HaShlishi, threefold Torah, threefold nation, the level of Tiferes, beauty. Hashem in the 3,000th year era created, gave Matan Torah. The 4,000th year era was the Beis HaMikdash, first and second Beis HaMikdash. That's the Inyan Shemesh and Yireach. The Netzach, the victory, the power of the Jewish people. Anyway, it goes on until the 7,000th year era is the era of Mashiach. So that's why it says in the Pasuk, not only B'sheishis Yomim, but the Sviris. It's interesting, all these emotional revelations of Hashem have different names to them. They're called the seven Midot, they're called Svirot, the 10 Sviros of Hashem. They're also called, in Kabbalah and Hasidus, they're also called Yom. Why? Because Yom means day, shining. Svira, the Svirot means Evan Sapir, to shine. Like we say in Tehillim, Midavan Avi Shabbos, Hashemayim Mesaprim Kvod Kel. That means they reveal, they tell the glory of God. So the attributes of Hashem are called Svirot, or Midot, because they reveal godliness. Therefore in Kabbalah it says that also the word Yom is also for the Midot, for the revelations of God, because Yom is day which shines. It's not night which is dark, it's shining. So all the Svirot are called actually Yom. So when the Pasuk says, Ki sheishis Yomim Asa Hashem, not only in 6 days, the 6 days themselves made as a Shemayim Vesa Ardis, the heaven and earth. Uvayim Ashvi, but on the 7th day, Shavas Vayinafash, that's when Hashem rested, and that's the concept of Shabbos, like we explained, that's when Hashem elevated himself, or so to speak, retracts himself to a level of above creation, as we discussed last week. Then Hashem is creating everything with Machshava, so to speak, rather than Dibur. During the week, Hashem created with speech, like we learned last week. Shabbos, Hashem creates the world on a higher level with the concept of Machshava. Another thing in Pasuk Tazayin, when it says that the Jews should keep Shabbos, Lasi Sisa Shabbos means actually the Jew makes Shabbos. In other words, in order for Hashem to have the inyan of Shabbos, in order for Hashem to have the concept of Shabbos, the Jews need to be the one to make it. We have to create it. Because whatever happens in the spiritual worlds is dependent on what we do. So,
we're coming from the Simcha.
Shamru b'nei Yisrael says Shabbos, through the guarding of Shabbos, it becomes Lasis of the Shabbos. The Jew makes the Shabbos happen in the spiritual sense, that they create the Kedusha and the sanctity of Shabbos.
Isn't it like vice versa also?
The what?
That whatever happens, you see, whatever happens in this world, it affects up there. So whatever happens up there, does it affect here too?
It's a catch-22 situation. What we do causes Hashem to do. When Hashem does, He reveals Himself more to us. Yes. That's why when it says in Pirkei Avos, mitzvah gereres mitzvah. One mitzvah drags and schleps another mitzvah. One aveda schleps and drags another aveda. What does it mean? It means very simple. When a Jew does a mitzvah, they become holier. Right? If you're holier, it's automatically easier to do another mitzvah. Because when you get more Kedusha of God upon yourself, so then automatically it's easier to do another mitzvah. Then you do another mitzvah, you get more holiness when you do an Aveda, and Chas V'Sholom, in the opposite way. So the sin drags you down. Once you're on a lower level, you go even lower. So this is the way it goes with the holiness. Shh, please, what's going on? Either in the level of Kedusha it goes up, or in the level of evil it goes down. That's what it does. So it has an effect both ways. Okay, so now Moshe Rabbeinu is in Har Sinai, and he's about to come down with the Luchis, with the tablets that Hashem gave him. So the Pasuk says, Vayiten al Moshe, Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Luchis. Now, Rashi right away comments the famous rule in Torah, Ein mukdam u'me'ocher b'Torah. There is no chronological order in Torah. Certain things mentioned before are really happening later. Certain things happening later happen before. In Torah, there's no necessarily a chronological order. Rashi says this pasuk that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Luchis happened after the eagle, after the golden calf. Even though the Torah writes that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Luchis. And then it speaks about the story of the Jews worshipping the golden calf. But Rashi explains, this is Rashi's opinion, everybody agrees with it. Rashi maintains, from the Medrash, one opinion in the Medrash, that God gave Moshe the tablets after the Jews sinned in the Egel. So this parasha belongs a little bit later in Chumash.
Which time did we got in Truma, in Yitro, we got the Torah already.
Right. Now what happened, this is what Rashi makes the Cheshbon over here. Rashi says like this. The Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu went up the next morning. Okay, just to get the historical events straight. Torah was given on Shabbos. Shabbos morning we got the Torah. Sunday morning, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai. He said to the Jews, guys, I'm taking a break for 40 days. I'm coming back in 40 days. Okay? I'm coming down in 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu came down on the 17th of Tammuz, Shivasa B'Tammuz, together with the Luchis. Okay? He came down 40 days later. The Jews, as we will see soon, miscalculated the 40 days. So the Jews thought Moshe Rabbeinu is coming down on the 16th of Tammuz. But Moshe Rabbeinu never said that. He said, I'm going up for 40 complete days. Meant Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, it was a miscommunication. They thought Moshe Rabbeinu was coming down on the 16th of Tammuz. And 16th of Tammuz went by and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come back. So they started making the segel. According to other opinions, Moshe Rabbeinu said he was coming down on the 17th. It was just a 6-hour delay that they thought he wasn't coming back. So Moshe Rabbeinu came down on the 17th of Tammuz with the Luchis, with the tablets. That was the day the Jewish people worshipped the golden calf. He saw them worshipping the golden calf. He broke the Luchis. How, what, when, where, that we're going to see how it took place. There's a lot of interesting Medroshim, how the Luchis broke. So the Luchis broke. Moshe Rabbeinu said, oh my God, you guys are bad. I'm going to go back up. He went up on the 18th of Tammuz back up for another 40 days. He came down Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul, the 29th of Av. And Hashem was still angry after the second 40-day period. Moshe Rabbeinu came down and he said, you know what? I'm going back up. I'm trying my luck again. He went up Rosh Chodesh Elul, and he came down on Yom Kippur, 40 days later, with the second set of Luchis. So this is the order of actually what happened. Now, when did Hashem give Moshe Rabbeinu the Luchis? When he was about to come down. Which was on the 17th of Tammuz, after they worshipped the golden calf. But over here, the Pasuk says the story before they worshipped the golden calf. And therefore, Rashi says, there's no chronological order of the Torah.
So when did Yitro take over? Sorry, coach.
Who?
Yitro.
Yitro didn't take over.
But we had the Ten Commandments.
No, that was the 6th of Sivan. Before he went up.
Oh, before he went up.
He went up before he went up. So he went up on the 6th, God came down on Mount Sinai the 6th of Sivan. He went up on the 7th of Sivan.
40 days
he came down with the Luchis. The only problem, and he broke them. The only question is, here it says God gave him the Luchis, and then they worshipped the eagle. And Rashi says the story was, first they worshipped the golden calf, and then Hashem gave him the Luchis. What?
No,
look at me. Don't look at everybody else.
No, I've learned how to listen. I never told you this.
Oh, no.
But you raised an interesting point.
Maddie, a mitzvah, please make it fast.
Yeah, getting a mitzvah for doing things, you know, God's way, whatever. And I had the time. World War II was still on.
Okay, we're not... Come on,
well,
really,
I'll make
it fast.
Give me a moment.
No.
Okay. I want to know how many mitzvahs I got. I killed 5 Japanese who were ready to put fire to a shul in China and kill whoever was in there. And when I saw them, I machine gunned them to death. Somewhere in my house, I got an award for that. Now, How many mitzvahs did I earn for that?
I know, I didn't count. Okay, so now the pasuk said like this. V'yitin al Moshe, Hashem gave it to Moshe, k'chaleise l'dabit ite, when he finished speaking with him. Which means, after 40 days, Hashem spoke to him, and gave him the luchis, shnei luchis o'edis, the two tablets of testimony. I'll explain this whole pasuk in a second. Luchis heaven, they were made by stone. Ksuvim be'ezba l'kim, engraved by the letters of God. Meaning, the first luchis were made by God, inscribed by God, completely written in everything. Now, what does it mean over here? The Mefarshim explain. What does it mean here? Vayitein al Moshe k'chaleisei. So Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu started forgetting Torah. You can have a great teacher as God, you can have a great student as Moshe Rabbeinu, but to learn the entire Torah in 40 days is impossible.
What page are you on?
492. So Hashem gave him the Torah as a gift. That means, the Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu kept learning and kept forgetting. Hashem said, when he was about to go down, Hashem said, here's the gift. And Moshe Rabbeinu remembered everything. Okay? That's why it says the expression, Kichalesei. Now normally, Kichalesei should be spelled with two vavs. Chav chav lamed vav sav vav. Okay? So Rashi learns it was like a kala. It was a gift. He like a matana of a kala to the chassan, that it was impossible to learn such amount of Torah in 40 days. And then Rashi says another interpretation from the Medrash. So what do you mean there? Like a kala? Just like a kala has 24 ornaments, whatever that means. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah has 24 books of scriptures. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, L'dabet itay. So Rashi says, what does it mean to speak with him? When Hashem taught it, Moshe Rabbeinu repeated everything. That's why it says, L'dabet itay, not L'dabet elov. If Hashem was speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu, it would say, K'chaleisi L'dabet elov, when he finished speaking to him. What does it mean, itay, with him? That Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever Hashem said, Moshe Rabbeinu repeated it, to make sure he got it right. So this is, so to speak, the Rashi of the parsha. What?
We've had somewhat of a raging debate on this issue. Moshe Rabbeinu learned the whole Torah, but yet concepts were revealed later that Moshe did not know, let's say.
Correct.
So, what is the correct thing?
John, speak louder, John.
You learned everything up to... I mean, it's hard to understand.
It's very easy to understand.
Yeah, not all was revealed.
No, everything was revealed. There's, Let's elaborate on it because it's fundamental stuff. It says in the Gemara, "Come and listen to the expression carefully." Kol ma shetalmid vasek osed lechadish, hakol kvar nitna lemoshe mesinai. Anything a talmid is going to come up with a chiddush, new, was already given. Now that's a ridiculous statement. If it was already given, it's not new. And if it's new, it can't already be given. It's a contradiction of terms. Mashe Talmid Vasik, what a proper student, Osid L'Chadish, that means it's a Chiddish, you're saying it's new. And then, Kvanidna L'Meshim, it was already given, so then it's not new. Okay? And remember we told the story in the Gemara with Rabbi Kiva, you know, okay. So, what does this mean as follows? It means very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is very important even, why do I want to elaborate on it? Because it's very important in, as the Gemara uses the expression Pirkei Avos, Dama Shetoshev L'Apikeiros. You have to know how to explain things to people that don't have an awareness of Yiddishkeit of Torah mitzvahs, and they say, why are the rabbis coming up with these new things, and this couldn't have been given from God at Sinai because God didn't talk about these things, and these things didn't exist in those days, and so on and so forth. There is, in any type of wisdom, there is klal, and there's prat. There's the general concepts, and then there's the details of the concepts. Okay? Now, every klal, every general rule, has details. Every detail comes from a general rule. Now, if I know the general rule, in a general fashion, there's millions of details that come from that that I don't necessarily am aware of at the time I know the klal. But nevertheless, every detail is really part of the rule, of the general. Every detail is part of the general rule. So therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu learned on Har Sinai, he learned every single klal, every single generalization that exists in Torah. Every detail that comes out through later generations as they expand and expound on the Torah are only details of the general rule that God gave Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. And therefore, the Gemara is saying is, when a Talmud, when a proper student, reveals a detail from that general rule, that detail is a chiddush. That detail wasn't revealed yet. It's a new revelation. But the truth is, it's all part of the klal. It's not anything new. In other words, it's new that it was revealed from the hidden to the revealed. But the truth is, it was always there. It just was hidden. What the student did was reveal that particular detail. So did Moshe Rabbeinu necessarily have to know all the details? Not necessarily. But once Moshe Rabbeinu knew every generalization of Torah, therefore everything was included in that klal, which was given, the general rule, which was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. To give you an example, all the modern day technology, yeah?
Shalom Shabbat.
What?
Like, I was going to ask, what about, like, Shalom Shabbat, let's say, is it something with you?
Okay. Now, let's say you have, okay, I don't know why you mentioned that case. There's much more. No, the more, there's nothing. There's more complicated cases. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, can you use a timer on Shabbos? A time clock on Shabbos? Now, did God speak to Moshe Rabbeinu about a time clock? 100% not. But a time clock is a prat, a detail, in a general rule. Like, for instance, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, a Jew, it's not a very tangible example, but a Jew, Moshe Rabbeinu said to, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, a Jew cannot work on Shabbos. A Jew cannot work on Shabbos. That's the general rule. Now, can a machine work for you on Shabbos? That's a detail coming out of the general rule. Is a machine considered you? Is it not considered you? Is it direct? Is it indirect? You can have zillions of details. A Jew cannot do malach on Shabbos, right? Now, you can have direct, indirect, koyach, koyachay, gram, gram, you know, you can have double indirects. You can have machines. You can have goy. You can have zillions of different cases, which are all details that are coming out from the general rule. Okay, I'll give you another example. I'll get to driving Shabbat. I'll give you another example where you see this very clear. The marshal in medical issues today. Okay, we may use this example many times because it's very clear. Did Hashem speak to Moshe Rabbeinu about heart transplants? No, he didn't. He didn't speak to Moshe Rabbeinu about heart transplants. But Hashem did tell Moshe Rabbeinu general guidelines. L'moshel, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu what the definition of death is. Okay, let's, without getting into the big argument in Halacha, but Hashem, let's say, told Moshe Rabbeinu the definition of death is respiratory death, not brain dead. Let's say this is what Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu.
When the heart stops,
not when the brain stops. Mm-hmm. Now, based on that concept, the question of heart transplants is very clear. Why? I'm not saying this is the halacha, I'm just discussing it. Because in order to take a donor's heart, the heart has to still be working. You can't take a dead heart and make it work. Right? The heart still be working. So how do they take out a heart from a person then they're killing the donor? The answer is, science, let's say, maintains that brain dead is death. And because brain dead in science is death, in legal law, so therefore, as soon as the person becomes brain dead, the heart is still working, so right away they'll take out the heart, and they'll give it to the recipient, and then, okay. But if Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem, let's say, that a heart transplant, that the concept of death is respiratory death, then did Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu about heart transplants? No. But as a detail of that halacha, what the definition of death is, you can know that heart transplants would be forbidden because you're killing the donor. I didn't say we're pasking. I said this is the concept of where the details come out of it. Now, did Moshe Rabbeinu discuss with Hashem about driving a Lexus or a Mercedes on Shabbos? No, he didn't. But if Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, again, I'm just discussing because it's all up for discussion. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Leisevado eish b'chol mashvisechem b'yom Shabbos. You cannot create fire on Shabbos, and let's say, for argument's sake, electricity is fire, right? So then it's understood that I can't turn on a light, and I can't start the engine of a car, and every time I feed gas, it's making more fire, it's consuming the gas, which is creating a fire, and every time I step on the brakes, the brake lights go on, which is again electricity, and you know, all these things. So did Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu about cars? No, he didn't tell him about cars. But from the klal that Moshe Rabbeinu was given at Har Sinai, we can come out through all the pratim. So when a rabbi comes out with concepts of heart transplants, or cars and Shabbos, or doing mitzvahs on the moon, or in Mars, or whatever it may be of modern technology, everything was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. The only question is, you need, and this is what the greatness of great rabbis are, they're able to find from the klal, which was given to Moshe at Har Sinai, which is mentioned in the Gemara, let's say, from there you can understand how the detail comes out of it. But the detail is really a new thing because in an open fashion, the detail is not in the klal. It's not mentioned in the general rule. You know, did Hashem speak to Moshe Rabbeinu about cars? No. Did he speak to him about microwave ovens? No. Did he speak to him about who knows what? No. Did he speak to him about stem cell research? No. But based on the concepts of what Moshe Rabbeinu was given in Har Sinai, you can know if stem cell research is allowed, if you're allowed to clone. And again, what din the cloned person would have? Would he have a din of a person or a golem? Does he have an neshama? This is all details coming from the general rules. So when Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayiten al Moshe, he gave him the Torah, not only the two luchos, but he gave him everything in the Torah, right? That was the general guidelines for all the future generations and all the future details that were going to come up throughout any possible generation. Now, these luchos, what?
Like Rashi commentaries as well, right?
Right, they're expounding and expanding on the Torah. Now, even, I'll give you an example to answer another fundamental question. So, therefore, when people today ask, well, what do you talk about? What does Torah know about heart transplants? Or stem cell research, or any of the, you know, any technological thing, right? Everything's in the Torah. Everything is applied from the general rules to the details of how it comes out. Now now there's another fundamental question. How can you have an argument in Torah? What did God say? Did God say kosher? Did God say treif? Did God say allowed or God say no allowed? So, and you have all these arguments. You know, some poskim say you could do this. Some opinions in the Gemara say you could do this. Some opinions in the Gemara say you can't do this. So the question is, what did God say? What did God give Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai? And again, it's the same concept. I mentioned not long ago, there's a Gemara in Gittin. Two rabbis were arguing in a halacha, and one of them bumped into Eliyahu Navi in the street. And he said, what is God learning upstairs in the yeshiva? Hashem has a big yeshiva there, a lot of souls. And Hashem, he asked Eliyahu Navi, what is God learning yeshiva? So he said, God is learning this and this halacha that they were arguing about. So he said, no, so what does Hashem say? You know? So Eliyahu Navi answered, Hashem says, Rabbi so-and-so says this, and Rabbi so-and-so says this. The two names of the two people arguing. So the guy says to Eliyahu Navi, V'chi'ika sveika kamemora. Is there a doubt by God? What do you mean? God doesn't know what the halacha is. So what does it say? Hashem, Eliyahu Navi said to him, Elo va'elo divrei alokim chayim. They're both right. Both are what God says. God said kosher, and God said treif. So the question is, how could that be? Is it kosher? Is it treif? What? Which one is it? So in practical halacha, there's only one way. As the Gemara says about David HaMelech and Sanhedrin, the Gemara says, "V'Hashem imay halacha kamaisei b'chol mokim." Whenever David HaMelech had an argument, God was with him. Hashem imay halacha kamaisei b'chol mokim. So in Kabbalah and Chassidus it explains that when it comes to Elu v'Elu, it says divrei alokim chayim. When it says halacha kamaisei, that's Hashem imay. Okay, Yudke Vavke versus Elokim. What does this mean? So you see this in Chumash itself. You see this explanation in Chumash itself. You see Mamish this concept. And I'll show it to you inside because we have all the Chumashim here. Look in okay, on page 26, all the way back at the beginning of Chumash. Two lines in the bottom of the page.
It says Bafta.
Yeah, hey, good. The pasuk says, "Vayar Hashem kiraba roas ha'adam ba'aretz." Hashem saw that the wickedness of man was great upon earth. And all the thoughts, the product of the thoughts of his heart, was only to do bad. Okay? So basically, what is Hashem saying? A person is bad, and therefore, what does it say? Hashem regret that he made the people, and he said, I'm going to destroy the world. Okay? So in other words, what happened over here? Hashem says like this, people are bad, therefore, I will destroy them. Yeah? That's what it says. Turn to page 40. 38 at the bottom. I'm sorry. 38 at the bottom. The flood is over. Noach comes out of the ark, brings a carbon or two. Yeah? And then Hashem says in sentence 21 at the bottom of 38. Hashem alibay, Hashem said to himself, I will not curse the earth anymore. Why? Because a person's heart is bad from birth. It's very interesting. The same logic that a person is born bad, God used for two opposite things. Before the flood, Hashem says a person is bad, therefore I'm going to kill him. After the flood, Hashem says, a person is born bad, so he's not to blame when he does bad. Okay? So you have one logic, it says in Chumash, you have one logic. A person is born bad. A person is born bad. God used that logic before the flood as a reason to destroy the world. And after the flood, after Noach brought a carbon, and Hashem became, so to speak, in a better mood, so Hashem said, you know what? The same logic that I destroyed the world because people are bad, the same logic I'm going to show you that people are really not to blame when they do bad. Because Hashem said, what do you want when they do bad? They're born bad. What do you want? What does this mean? It means very simple. There's one logic. A person is born bad. You could look at that logic with chesed, and it will justify the person's evil. You could look at it with strictness, and it will condemn the person's action. How could that be? When there's an argument in Torah, there's a logic that could be looked at two ways. You could look at favorably, and therefore it's kosher. You could look at it strictly, and therefore it's treif. And both are right. Like this over here. Both are right. There's a person is born bad. So you could look at it with a good eye to say, therefore, no more flood. And you look at the same logic with a bad eye and therefore destroy the people. And therefore, every argument, and this is what Hashem's telling him, Elu ve'elu divra l'kim chayim. In practical halacha, you can't have kosher and treif. It's either kosher or treif. But in Torah, both are right. There's a kosher perspective. There's a treifer perspective. Both are God's wisdom. If you look at it lenient, it's kosher. If you look at it strict, it's treif. If you look at lenient, you're allowed to do it. If you look at it strict, you're not allowed to do it. Both are right. Both were given to God at Sinai.
Can you give an example?
We just gave one.
Accept the assumption.
Heavy argument in Torah. What do you mean?
No, but if you take chazer, it never can be...
There's no argument if you're allowed to eat chazer.
But what it can be in strictness, something like Hillel and Shammai?
Yeah, any argument Hillel and Shammai, any argument, any person in the Gemara. Anytime you have an argument, whether something is kosher or treif, it's taking Hashem's wisdom to look at it this way. For instance, we know in the Gemara, when there was an argument between Hillel and Shammai, or Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, which were offshoots of them, 95% of the time, Beis Hillel was lenient, and Beis Shammai was strict. There's a whole parak in Mishnayis Idyas that says, Eile mikulei Beis Shammai umechumre Beis Hillel. The whole parak of Mishnayis goes through all the arguments of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Shammai is lenient and Beis Hillel is strict. Okay, one second. So why is it that Beis Hillel most of the time is lenient and Beis Shammai is most of the time strict? So in Kabbalah it says, because Beis Hillel's neshamas came from the attribute of chesed, and Beis Shammai's neshamas came from the attribute of gevurah. So therefore, Shammai, not God forbid they ruled by their neshama, because Torah is not in heaven, but their neshama guided them, Shammai, in a way of strict observation, strict perception, and Hillel, because of the neshama, led their seichel, their intellect, to look at it in a more lenient way. But therefore, because Hillel looked at things from a chesed perspective, I'll give you a simple example. A guy drives a car on Shabbos. Okay, you can have two approaches. You could have the stoning approach, yeah, or you can look at him, Nebuch. It's sad, the Jew doesn't know anything, let's go teach him. One is a chesed approach, one is a gevurah approach. Both have their basis in Torah. In both, you can find a basis in Torah for it.
You cannot stone anybody in Torah, no?
Why? The skila. You can, in Torah, you can have, there is a logic to say, stone them, and there's a logic to say, have pity on them, you know, teach them. Both are right, it depends on the perspective. So therefore, anytime there's an argument in Torah, anytime there's things, a difference of opinions of Torah, what the Torah is saying, basically, everything was given to Moshe at Sinai. There is sometimes a strict approach, sometimes there's a lenient approach. Soon. Okay, so now he says like this. Now, the question is, why did Hashem have to give him two luchas instead of one? As everybody knows, the Jews, when God offered the Torah to the Jews asked, how much was it? So the Hashem set free, so the Jews said, give us two. That's why he got two luchas. That's the real reason. But the commentaries say other reasons too.
What is two luchas?
The two tablets. One is tablets that Moshe came down, you know, Moshe Ben had a headache, God told him, take two tablets and go to sleep.
Even then?
Yeah. He says that, why does he give him two tablets? Because corresponding with Shemayim and others, heaven and earth. Because like we learned already, God made a condition that what the Jews accept Torah, God will keep the heaven and earth going. Another reason why the God gave two luches is really the pasuk itself says, Shnei luches ha'edus, the two tablets of testimony. Witnesses, you need two. So if the luches are testimonials, the Mefarshim explain, then you need two luches. Another thing is, okay, that's basically the primary two reasons of why he gave him two luchis. Now, the Gemara learns out from here, and this we're going to discuss in a second. It says the word luches without a vav. If you look at the word luches, normally luches should be spelled lamed vav ches tzav. Instead, luches is without the vav between the lamed. So it says, why is this? The Gemara learns out, like Rashi says, in fact Rashi says this, Shayushteim Shavas, both luches were equal. Okay, both luches are equal. That means exactly the same measurement. Now, the Gemara says clearly, and this is a wonder, where in the world Jews get these rounded tablets. Whenever you see, you know, in many places, they want to show the tablets, they show rounded tablets, which is mamish against a Gemara and Yerushalmi and a Medrash. The Midas were like, the measurements of the Midas, the Gemara says, were like this. 6 tvachim by 6 tvachim, 3 tvachim deep. That means the tefach is a handbreadth, between 3 and 4 inches, okay? In the opinions,
so it's square?
The luchas were square, not cube. The luchas were mamish square. 6 tvachim by 6 tvachim, 3 tvachim deep. Okay, so the depth was half of the length and the width. So the luchas, again, if you count the 3 inches per tefach, one second, if you count 3 inches per tefach, it was either 18 inches by 18 inches, a foot and a half by a foot and a half.
2.5 foot.
What is your luchas?
The tablets that God Moshe broke down for...
40 centimeters.
It's
about 32 inches square.
Each tefach is 4 inches, right? 3 to 4. It's between 3. It's either 18 to 24 inches.
40 centimeters.
It's either a foot and a half. It's an amma. 6 tefachim is an amma.
It's not that big.
Each luches... Huh? It's not. It's 3 tefachim. It was very... By the way... A tefach is a hand breadth. Each lucha was 6 tvachim by 6 tvachim, but there were 2 of them, no? So 6 tvachim by 6 tvachim by 3 tvachim. So if you figure out, let's count even 4 inches per tefach, yeah? So it's 2 feet by 2 feet by 1 foot.
Were they heavy?
They were very heavy. In fact, we'll learn that one of the reasons why Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchas was because it's impossible to carry such a weight. And the only thing, the godliness of the letters held it up. So when the Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Jews sin, the godliness left, and they were pushing heavy. And they were too heavy, so he dropped them. So one opinion says he actually broke them. Another opinion says in the Medrash, we're going to get to, that he actually dropped them rather than breaking them. So the Gemara implies that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchas, because Hashem said to him, thank you for breaking the luchas. So the luchas, one thing is for sure, that not according to one opinion in Gemara and Medrash, were they rounded on top. It's mamish square, each one, 6 by 6. So both of them together was 12 tvachim, with 2 amis by 3 tvachim deep.
And if you put them back to back, then it was a complete...
No, but they weren't back there, they were next to each other.
I have a very appropriate question for you.
Not a statement, a question. Okay.
Okay.
No, but ask me the question. Come on.
I want Lolita to listen.
All right, I'm going to continue. Hello?
Listen. John, get your people quiet.
They were not separate. It was one stone, two luchas.
They're 2 luchas.
I want you to listen.
Were they together?
Rabbi,
you're asking a question or saying a statement?
I want to go back to the people who do nothing but good with their lives.
Okay, so in 5 minutes, I want to finish the point. Sit down. Yeah.
Were they together or they were...
They were separate. Shnei luchas, they were together, separate.
No, but he carried
them. He carried them. Did he carry one in each hand? I wasn't there. It doesn't say, it just says it was two luchis. If they were connected, then it's 1 luach. And if they're not
connected,
did he carry them together, one in each hand like this? I wasn't there, I promise you, I don't know.
There is no
I didn't see anything. If you watch the movie, it's probably wrong. So whatever the movie shows, just do the opposite. Okay. Now, okay. So the luchos were written by the hand of Hashem himself, meaning that a person, that Hashem actually wrote the luchos from A to Z. There's a lot of other things they write here about the luchos, even though they were very heavy. And they hear the Medrash says another interesting thing. Even though the luchos were this metal, they're able to be rolled like a Sefer Torah.
What?
They're able to, that's what the Medrash says.
Metal.
Yeah.
It's
stone, I didn't say metal, I said stone. I'm sorry, I meant stone, I'm stone. Even though there was stone, he says, nevertheless, he says, Niglulu kasefer Torah kilu hayochei merach, even though they were very hard.
What kind of stone?
Sapphire stone.
So that means he brought it down
and rolled on. Gotta watch the movie again, I don't know. Now it says that just like, why is the Torah telling us this luchos heaven? Because the Torah wants to tell us, just like stone doesn't melt, a person when they learn Torah should not become tired. They should constantly be refreshed and do it properly. Another thing is, what? Now these luchos, as it says in Pirkei Avos, were created on Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmoshes. Twilight on Erev Shabbos, which means that they were higher than world, because it was twilight, entering into Shabbos, Bein HaShmoshes, so it was higher than world, but connected to world. And that's the whole concept of the Luchos. Right, not the second. The second one Moshe Rabbeinu made.
Do we know where the first one is? The broken Luchos? Do we know where it is?
The Aron in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, the Luchos and the broken luchos were inside the ark, the Aron. Okay?
This is a movie.
Now, when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, and he foresaw it was going to be destroyed, he built underground curvy tunnels, okay? And Yeshayo HaMelech foresaw the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash many years later. He buried the Aron, which had in it the luchos. So the luchos and the Aron are underneath the Beis HaMikdash, out of sight. There's no way anybody's going to find them.
So the broken one and the second.
Right. In fact, it's brought down in Tzvarim that the word Elul, because Moshe Rabbeinu came down, went up the last 40 days in Elul. Elul is a Rosh HaTevis, Arein Luches V'Shivrei Luches. That Elul stands for Arein, the Ark, Luches, the Luches, V'Shivrei Luches, and the broken Luches. So in the Ark was the Luches and the broken Luches. According to one opinion in Gemara, the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote was also in the Aron. Some people say, no, there was if this was the Ark, there was a board protruding out of it, that's where the Torah was on. And one opinion in the Gemara says it was actually in the Aron itself. But the Aron had in it the Luches, the Shivrei Luches.
Why can't
when Mashiach comes, we'll have it again. Sure. It was missing throughout the second Beis HaMikdash. It's underground.
Oh, okay.
What?
Why didn't they fetch them out from where they were and put them in the second one?
Because Hashem didn't want it there. Hashem didn't want it. Five things were missing. The Urim V'Tumim we learned was missing. The Tzitzit Saman and the stick. There's five things that were missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. One of them was the Aron and the Luchos. The Jews were not worthy of having the Luchos during the second Beis HaMikdash.
But are the other things where the Luchos are?
Yes, same place.
But some of them have been stolen by the Romans.
Not those five things. They're underground. They were never found.
Oh, okay.
The menorah was taken. And the other Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash were taken.
Where is it?
In the Vatican.
Shh. That says that he found the law and reinstated it. So when it says he found the law, what are they talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about. That doesn't mean anything.
No, it's from the second day of Pesach. It's the Haftorah portion.
No.
So it talks about King Yoshiyahu and that he found the law and he reinstated it.
found the law, second day of Pesach.
Never before was there a king, and never since has there been
right.
A king.
Right.
I think my understanding.
Yeah, but it says. What?
Does it say that he found it and he reinstated it? Or just that he reinstated it?
He reinstated the laws because the Jews weren't keeping a lot of the laws.
Right,
he got rid of the idols and he burnt them and he.
But somewhere I read that he actually found, I guess, something that with regard to the law.
Because Yeshio was the one that buried it, the Gemara says.
Okay, that's the reason why I was asking, because I thought that's what you just said, is that he also is the one who buried it.
Yeah, but I don't know what that. No, I don't think so. No. Okay, that's the story of the Luchas, at least. And it was written with the finger of God, as it explains. We're going to see more the difference between the first and the Luchas. It was was from the... And that's why it's an interesting thing. Rabbeinu Bachaya, just one more last thing before we close. Rabbeinu Bachaya says an interesting thing. The Luchas were made out of stone, which is from the ground, and the writing is the writing of God. So again, the whole concept of the Luchas is to connect heaven and earth. The writing is heaven, and the stone itself is earth.